You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, first he was under arrest, then he wasn't. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. John King was reporting on CNN News about a half hour ago, maybe 40 minutes ago, that there was a suspect who had been identified and was on his way in to be booked. Apparently as the consequence of both the Lord & Taylor, a department store chain that I believe is owned by the company that owns Macy's now. Is that Federated Department Stores? It's some giant combine that does a business under a bunch of different names, as most of them do. In any case, that they had a security camera and that it caught this guy putting the what apparently was the bomb in place, and that also one of the TV camera crews might have caught it. And so everybody was, in fact, they're massing outside the court, the federal courthouse right now. But then CNN walked that back and said, well, no, maybe there's not an arrest, actually, or an arrest hasn't been made. The latest is that, well, here's some of the descriptions. He was wearing a black jacket. He was on a cell phone. He was wearing a gray hoodie. He had a white backwards cap. These are quotes from various headlines. Two suspects singled out in video footage, possibly one in particular, the most interested. We'll see. We'll see where this goes. And in fact, by 5 o'clock, my understanding is it's 3 o'clock Eastern time right now. And, both here in Washington, D.C. and in Boston. And at 5 o'clock, so 2 hours hence, there is tentatively scheduled a press conference. Whether it's the daily normal, here's what's going on, or whether it's going to have something to do with, hey, we got this guy, who knows. But while a suspect or suspects may have been identified in connection with the Boston Marathon bombings, you know, it's still going to take us weeks, days, months, maybe years to truly find out about the exact motivation. We may have some breaking news here. Okay, everybody's just been asked to move away across the street, away from the building. So we'll see where this goes. Okay, WCBV and TV in Boston is reporting this, but who knows? I mean, it might have been a traffic problem. In any case, it's going to take a while before we know for sure exactly what happened. Even if this guy comes out and says, oh, yeah, I did it because my mother-in-law was in the race, you know, whatever. It's still not too soon for us to be considering why terrorists, foreign and domestic, take the actions they do. I mean, this is a good time for us to have this conversation, don't you think? I mean, foreign terrorists like, you know, Al-Qaeda, who attacked us on 9/11, and domestic terrorists who attack America, they usually have a specific grievance against our nation. Case of Al-Qaeda, they attacked us on 9/11, largely because bin Laden was offended that we still had U.S. troops on Saudi soil, and that was he was horrified that we may westernize his little variation of the Muslim world, and he thought that the price of oil was too low, that we were buying from Saudi Arabia. I mean, he ranted about this in 98. Meanwhile, a domestic terrorist, whether they're from the far right or the far left, they very often have specific grievances about something that the government is or is not doing, whether it's left-wing window smashing during WTO meetings or Occupy protests or right-wing bombing attacks in Oklahoma City in the 1996 Olympics. And frankly, I don't think there's that much equivalence there. One is destruction of property, the other is killing people. But nonetheless, there's always some underlying grievance that the perpetrators have. Although we could go back to the Weather Underground. There were people killed. When it comes to right-wing extremist attacks, in particular, and arguably, if you go back to the Weather Underground, the left-wing attacks, the grievance against America was almost always related to this meme of big government. The state's too powerful, too much government. But where's that really coming from? I mean, when Eric Rudolph, in 1996, the Olympic bomber, when he was finally captured, he shed some light on why he did the bombings. He said he thought that the Olympics, this is the guy, remember Richard Jewell? He was falsely accused of this. I was in Atlanta when this happened. It was, in fact, it was That was why the Georgia Police Academy opened themselves to civilians, and DeWitt Wanamaker and I went through, you know, took a class there, and I got licensed as a private detective and a badge and everything. Rudolph said that he thought that the Olympics, by bringing together athletes from throughout the world on an equal basis, promoted, his words, the despicable ideals of global socialism. End quote. Socialism, what do? Of course you blow up the Olympics. I mean, come on, isn't it obvious? How many times a day does some talking head in the right-wing media or the blogosphere or on right-wing talk radio try to argue that America is turning into a socialist country or that we have a socialist president or that Harry Reid is a socialist or that, you know? How many times a day do they argue that big government is the cause of all of our nation's problems?
Fear of a big, bad government edging towards record levels in the U.S. Everybody's up in arms.
This speech today was an ode to big government. It was a hymn to big government. This speech was a declaration the era of big government is back. I'm the man who will do it.
We've stagnated into an economy that has taken all that hope right down the slope and has left millions without jobs, forced out of their homes by foreclosure, herded into dependency upon a government that promises us candy but gives us cavities.
Now, I'm pretty sure that was Megyn Kelly, what's his name with the German name? Krauthammer, Charles Krauthammer, and Mike Huckabee. Yeah. Big government. Big government is the constant enemy of right-wingers, particularly those who are often funded by billionaires. I mean, speaking about Hillary Clinton, Dick Armey once said, quote, Hillary Clinton bothers me a lot. I realized the other day that her thoughts sound a lot like Karl Marx. She hangs around a lot of Marxists. All her friends are Marxists. End quote. I didn't know, frankly, that Dick Armey had ever read Karl Marx. I'm impressed. And then there's Charles Koch, who's speaking back in October 2012, said that, quote, I think it's scary that this administration that is fundamentally dedicated to transforming this country, and that means bigger and bigger government, more intrusive, less productivity, less opportunity. And who does that hurt the most? Hurts the poorest people. End quote. Right, this billionaire is really worried about the poorest people. But the problem is the poorest people hear that. And sadly, think maybe there's some truth to it. And while some billionaire backers of the right who speak ill about the government are bad enough, the meme that big government is the cause of all our problems is perpetuated each and every day in the right-wing media. Billionaires don't want big government. Because when government stops funding the commons, things like schools, hospitals, water, power systems, then billionaires can grab those natural monopolies and squeeze more and more money out of working people. I mean, while all the talk by the billionaires and corporate, you know, the corporate right, basically, and the right-wing media about big government might be good for massive transnational corporations and the wealthy elite, it has shaken the people's confidence in America and in the idea of Lincoln's government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Let's not forget, the founders of our country fought and died so we could have the type of government that we do. They fought and died for a government that looked out for all of the people, rich and poor, and we used to believe in our form of government. And now it's attacked daily by right-wingers on the radio, the web, the television, and in Congress. And while they attack our form of government, they freak out when someone mentions the decades of violence that have been dumped on us by people who hated or were afraid of the government. Anti-government talk, when in the abstract, is corrosive, and it activates the crazies to come out of the woodwork and unleash violence in our society. When anti-government talk is specific, if we're going to talk about drones or spying or torture or taxes, that's a good thing. That's an important dialogue. That's democracy in a republic. But when these demagogues use big government as a slur, we shouldn't be surprised to see right-wing extremists turn violent.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So back with more news of the developing situation in Boston as it continues, and my thoughts on it, your thoughts on it. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Meanwhile, a ricin-laced letter, or maybe a drop of it, or a hundredth of a drop of it, who knows, but a poison pen letter, apparently, has been identified as being sent to President Obama and to Senator Wicker. Senator Richard Wicker, Roger Wicker. He's apparently one of the newbies, or he's very, very quiet, because I've never interviewed the guy. I think he's a Republican. And that makes me scratch my head, because this is something that I'm still scratching my head about after 9/11. And I'm wondering what the legislation is that's in the waiting in the wings, because after 9/11, all of a sudden, I mean, literally, a few weeks after 9/11, we had this like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 page, you know, Patriot Act bill, this giant piece of legislation that basically stripped us of our civil liberties and threw us into a state of perpetual war and turned George Bush into a dictator. And it was like, ta-da! Where'd that come from? Well, we've been working on it for a few decades. Ever since we brought the Nazis over and, you know, to turn the OSS into the CIA back in the 50s. I don't know, but, you know, it's all of a sudden we had the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act, you know, there were a lot of Americans on the left and the right who were looking at the Patriot Act going, I don't think so. I don't think we're going to set aside our Constitution. I don't think we're going to give these kind of powers to the president. Just because some crazy people took out a building and killed a bunch of people doesn't mean that our entire nation goes nuts. And it doesn't mean we give up our values. I think Barbara Lee, I might be conflating the war resolution and the Patriot Act, spoke out against. In any case, there were two senators through whom the Patriot Act had to go after 9/11 to get to the floor of the Senate for a vote. Had to get out of the Judiciary Committee, and the Democrats controlled the Senate at that time, and the chairman of the Judiciary Committee was the senior senator from Vermont, Patrick Leahy, who, by the way, is one hard-ass guy. He's a former federal prosecutor. I've met Pat Leahy. I don't know him, you know, well. I don't know him personally. I don't know him, you know, the way I know Bernie, but I've met him. I've been in people's homes with him and had dinner with him and that kind of thing. And this guy is solid. He's decent. He's quite progressive for a former federal prosecutor. And he's all about law and order, and he understands the Constitution, Pat Leahy. So he was the chairman of the Democratic chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Patriot Act had to get past him, and he was making noises like, I don't know about this. There's a lot of stuff in here that gives me a whole lot of pause. We need to think this through carefully. And then if it got through Leahy's committee, then it had to go to Tom Daschle, who was the Senate Majority Leader. He had the job Harry Reid has right now. Tom Daschle, the senator from, what was it, North Dakota, as I recall? South Dakota. Mix up my Dakotas. My apologies. And Tom Daschle had to bring it to the floor of the Senate for a vote. And he schedules the votes because, you know, that's like how Harry Reid does it, how Harry Reid just scheduled this Stock Act. So now congressmen can go back to doing trades on insider information. Oh, let's not go there. We'll get to that later on in the show. So anyhow, the thing about the president and this Republican senator apparently getting Ricin letters in the mail. Now, keep in mind, ricin is one of those things, because it is made from castor beans, castor oil beans, the beans that produce castor oil, which is, filled with common organic compounds, plant material. It's one of the things that is relatively easy to test for, but you get a lot of false positives. So we don't know for sure whether this is, but in any case, whether it is or it isn't, here's the thing. 9/11 happens, national tragedy. The right wingers suddenly cart out the Patriot Act and say, da-da-da, here we go, let's turn America into a police state. And the Democrats say, no, wait a minute, hold on. Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle, the two guys that it has to go through to get onto the floor of the Senate, they say, nah, don't think so. I want to give this some thought. And who are the only two elected officials in the United States of America who get weaponized anthrax in the mail? Think about this for a minute. And we still don't know who sent this. We do know that it came from a U.S. military facility. The only two people in the country, I realize I'm sounding like Alex Jones here, but hey, look it up. The only two people in the country, I mean, there were some journalists and whatnot, but the only two elected officials who got weaponized anthrax in the mail were Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle. They had to evacuate their offices. They had to leave behind all their paperwork. They had to leave behind all that stuff on the Patriot Act. And all of a sudden, everybody was saluting the Patriot Act. Oh, my God, they're coming for us. So when I see a national disaster, and as I've mentioned, we're still waiting to hear if somebody's actually been arrested, if there's one or two suspects. We're getting conflicting reports now. It's kind of like the networks are dueling with each other over who can get the first story out, principally CNN and Fox and MSNBC. But apparently the federal courthouse, well, this is interesting. The federal courthouse and the hospital were just evacuated. And two suspects singled out. But in any case, when I see a national disaster followed by poison pen letters, I get a really, really creepy deja vu. And I genuinely do not believe that that qualifies me for wearing a tinfoil hat. We'll see how this all plays out.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And one of the things I'm going to be looking for is there a piece of legislation coming down the road here soon? Okay. I love our chat room. We've got some great people here. And just a few of the comments, if I may share with you. I have to make sure that there are ones that I can say on the air, you know. Actually, I'm not going to identify who says what. You can drop into the chat room yourself, and it's over at TomHartman.com, and it's free. And you just click the community button and log in. No ads, no nothing. You pick a name for yourself. One person says, from what I saw, it was Fox News who was all over someone being arrested. And another one says, I didn't realize it was a tinfoil hat. I thought it was a pile of, well, okay. And then Gustav, he says, wait, John King is reporting that John King is in custody? What? What? And then, so in CNN's rush to blame, it got its butt handed to it. Delicious. CNN, this is hysterical. CNN guest, well, now that he knows that he's a suspect, host, how does he know that? Guest, because we just reported it. CNN is essentially showing footage of reporters in the street staring in bewilderment at their iPhones right now. Somewhere under a desk at CNN right now is a producer rocking back and forth in the fetal position, whimpering, make it stop, make it stop. Suspect, dark white male woman with hat and no hat. A person with oxygen in them, sometimes. Yeah, okay. So much for the entertaining stuff. Thank you all. But the bottom line is, we don't know what's going on. Other than that, the video camera at Lord & Taylor, the kind of high-end department store, that was Boylston Street, wasn't it? Isn't that where the last... Yeah, it's Boylston Street, I'm pretty sure. It's been a long time since I've been in Boston, but I spent a fair amount of time there. And that their security camera, which presumably would have been, looking at the window for smash and grabs or vandals or whatever, identified somebody putting down what might have been the bomb, and that maybe a TV crew also did. But they're starting to get video in now. And they're starting to identify, apparently, these are the reports. CNN was reporting an hour ago somebody had been arrested. Now, maybe somebody's been identified. Well, maybe it's two people who've been identified. See, Interesting. Shano points out to me CNN was the first to report Obamacare incorrectly at the Supreme Court. Yes, it's been struck down. It's been struck down. No. I know it's important to be first in the news business if you're in the news business. It's one of the nice things about being in the opinion business. I can wait 5 minutes and say, oh, well, now we know. Or here's my opinion on that. But apparently one or two people have been identified, and the federal courthouse and the hospital have been evacuated. We don't know if there's a relationship between these two. And there's going to be a 5 p.m. briefing. That's in an hour and a half. We will find out what's going on with that and share that with you. If there's anything, you know, of consequence, we'll even throw it on the air and you can hear it. And we'll see how this goes. You know, we'll see where this goes. It sounds to me like it's getting tighter. And then meanwhile, we've got, you know, a bunch of other things. The president and a senator have apparently, they've received letters that have been identified by the, they have a special post office here in D.C. It's one of the reasons why it's always a better idea. If you want to send a letter to your member of Congress about a piece of pending legislation and you want them to get it the next few days, don't send it to their D.C. office, because they got a special mail facility that's outside the city where they screen everything for poison. Or explosives and all that kind of stuff before they bring it into the city. And so mail coming into the city takes, at least to the government offices, doesn't seem to take that long. Some right winger has a new book out, we get them instantly. if the member of Congress, so it's better to send the mail, you know, send a letter, a real letter, a good letter, to your member of Congress's local office, particularly if you live in that state. I mean, it's your senator, your one of your two senators, or both of your senators, and your member of the House of Representatives. Send it to their local offices, because their local offices will actually get it and on time. So with that little bit of backstory, and again, I'm not telling secrets here. I mean, this is all publicly announced and debated. If these letters have been identified as having potentially poison in them, probably it was sent more than just a few days ago. Maybe there's something to do with this bombing. Maybe not. And like I said, it just brings up totally, for me, totally eerie, you know, this whole thing about, the anthrax after 9/11. And how, and I'm telling you, I was there. I mean, or I was here. We were not doing the radio program at that time. I was not on the air, but you know, I was a news guy for 7 years. I worked in radio for 11, I think, something like that, a long time. And, I pay a lot of attention to the news, and I was living in Vermont at the time, and it was my senator, Pat Leahy, my Democratic senator. His counterpart was not Bernie Sanders at that time. Bernie was in the House. His counterpart was Republican Jim Jeffords, and who had just left the Republican Party because they'd gone insane and become an independent. But it was my senator who got the anthrax. So, you know, I was paying pretty damn close attention to this. And like I said, we still don't know who sent that. There's an official story out there about some guy. Oh, yeah, it must have been him. Oh, yeah. Why? Well, he committed suicide, you know. I don't believe it. And most people don't. I mean, I think that story's been fairly well debunked. Alex in Santa Cruz, California, listening on Minnesota's Progressive Talks, AM950.com stream. Hey, Alex, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good morning or afternoon. This is what I'm seeing in Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that when there's a shooting tragedy in places like Sandy Hook or Colorado, the theater.
Right.
There's an emphasis by the media and the so-called liberal biased press on, there's an emphasis on the guns.
Right.
Now we have a bombing in Boston, and there's an emphasis on who the bomber is. So you talk about a lot about cracking the code and trying to get in, have empathy and trying to get inside the the Republican right-wing mind frame, the gun owner mind frame. Can you help me with this?
Because sure. Here's what's going on.
Apples and oranges.
It is apples and oranges, and it's a deliberate attempt to confuse people. The fact of the matter is that the gun industry in the United States is a multi-billion-dollar industry. It's one of the very most profitable industries in the country, and it is in the business of selling weapons of death. There is no bomb industry in the United States. All right, there's no bomb lobby. I guarantee you the company that made the pressure cooker, you know, Sunbeam or whoever it is, you know, the last thing on earth they're going to do is send a lobbyist down to Washington, D.C. and say, you know, you've got to make sure that if anybody buys one of our pressure cookers, there's no record of it on their credit card. Right. You know, there is no bomb industry in the United States. I mean, there is for, you know, selling bombs overseas, but not for your average terrorist. So because there's a gun industry, and it's not just a gun industry, it's a weapons of war industry, you know, where you can fire off 30, 50, 60, 100 rounds of ammunition without having to reload, and therefore you can kill a lot of people really, really fast. Because there's an industry, and they spend a lot of money on lobbying, and they pay Wayne Little Penis, LaPetite, what the hell's his name? LaPierre, Wayne LaPierre, they pay him $2 million a year to you know, be a front man for them. I mean, these are the gun manufacturers, just like they used to have the tobacco, you know, they I don't remember the name of the guy who used to be the, was it Morton Downey? Or was it Morton Downey Jr.? I'm not enough of a TV guy, but I think Morton Downey or Morton Downey Jr. was the official spokesman for the TV front group, you know, Americans for Freedom or something like that, or Smokers for American Freedom or whatever. And then he got lung cancer and died. That didn't work out so well, just like the Marlboro man did. But in anyhow, you got a front guy, you got the spokesman, you got all the, so that's the difference in my mind, Alex. Does that make sense?
It does to me, but yeah. Maybe it's because I'm a complex thinker.
What?
What can you say about those?
You have an IQ above room temperature. Holy cow!
I mean, is this a case of just some people haven't evolved?
I think anybody who says when there's a shooting we scream about the guns, and when there's a bombing we scream about the bomber and not the bomb, and is A, not telling the truth. When there's a shooting, we want to know who the shooter was, as well as the shooting implements. A. B, when there's a shooting, there's an industry behind it. There is no industry behind the bombing. Unless you want to call, you know, Al Qaeda or, you know, crackpot Tim McVeigh an industry, and of course we want to know why somebody did something, whether it's a shooting, a bombing, or you know.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Running down the street naked in public. I mean, we'd like to know why. Alex, thanks a lot for the call. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. It looks like ricin was in the letter that was sent to Obama. We'll see, and possibly to Senator, what's his name? Wicker. Thank you. Boston, apparently, after CNN reported that somebody had been arrested and then unreported it, John King said, yeah, he's been arrested. No, he hasn't. Yes, he's been identified. No, he hasn't. Yes, it's a one. No, maybe it's more than one. Apparently, when all that happened, you know, I reported to you a few minutes ago that the courthouse and the hospital had been evacuated. Apparently, again, the, you know, everything we're running on right now is, I was going to say secondhand news from our news sources, but it's really almost secondhand rumor from our news sources. Apparently, there was a bomb threat phoned in for the hospital and the courthouse rather than something else. You know, my original thought was the courthouse was evacuated because they were going to bring in the guy that they had arrested. But this is interesting. Billy in Scituate, Mass. Is in Boston at the court. Are you at the courthouse?
Hey, Tom. No, I'm actually leaving Boston now. But in terms of the courthouse, there was a bomb threat called in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the hospital, the Brigham and Women's Hospital, which is affiliated with the hospital I work at, that was not an overreaction, but apparently someone left a car running with gasoline containers in it, and, you know, so it was seen, and it just caused caused the evacuation there, apparently. Right. So
it could have been a car bomb.
It was definitely, yeah, and in terms of the local news, and then a police officer told me there was a bomb threat called in to the federal courthouse,
right,
which is down on the waterfront.
Right.
So
yeah, that's the report that we're seeing now. Okay,
yeah.
Billy, and what's the? I'm curious. You apparently you work at the hospital.
I do. Yes, it's one of the hospitals here. Yeah.
What's it like right now in Boston? What's the gestalt there? What's the sense of things? What's the
again? It's
the
still
the spirit of the time.
So it's still really quiet. I think a lot of people are still somewhat in shock.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if it happened elsewhere, it's funny. It wouldn't be the same, but because it's here, it really affects people. So people are really shooken up. And
sure.
You know, we had over 30 folks brought to our hospital. And so I'll just go up to the lobby to grab a soda or something. And there's still sort of a military presence, which I don't understand. But again, you don't know what's going on. But there's, you know, the families of the victims, et cetera. And, they're just, it's pretty horrible what happened.
Yeah. And we still don't know the motive. I mean, you know, in every now and then in some weird, CSI Miami kind of TV show, you discover that what was made to look like a murder was actually they were trying to get, you know, some guy was trying to kill his wife. And his wife might be in that hospital right now with a broken leg,
right.
And who knows? So I think it makes
Absolutely.
Sense that there would be security for the people who were injured.
I have one little bright note for you, which,
sure.
Again, it motivates me even more to get back to normal and to work hard. But our little town of Scituate, Mass, last week, it was actually kind of difficult to get it through the town council and the advisory board, which I understand they were a little reluctant, but we were able to pass, overwhelming majority to a resolution for a move to amend. So,
oh, really? Hey,
congratulations. Yeah, so, thank you. And you know, I Massachusetts, I think we're like 171 in terms of the towns.
Right.
Southeastern Mass, we're the first one. So we got to get it going here. So there's a lot of work to do.
Right.
But, we did a nice little small step and just one little bright thing. So,
that is great. Did you play a role in it or did you just?
I did a small role. You know, basically, yeah. I joke if you want to get something done, you just get, you know, you get guys like to talk a lot. Ladies tend to get things done more generally speaking. You know, I shouldn't say that, but
that's quite all right.
I joke
it's...
about that all the time. Yeah.
Sure.
So I just got behind these ladies and they did all the work and I did whatever I could and I was there to speak if need be, but I didn't need to because the folks that got up and spoke were just so persuasive.
That is great.
It was really
so
nice.
You and some women who really knew how to get things done got some stuff done. That's great. Billy, I got to move along, but thank you for the call from the Boston area and for letting us know what's going on down there.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. Good talking with you. Gary in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Gary, thanks for watching Free Speech TV and Comcast. What's up?
Yes, I just kind of want to make a comment about the ricin and the bombing and all the other stuff that, it makes people kind of frantic and stuff. But the best thing to do is don't let them, put you into a panic.
Yeah.
Make sure that you keep a level head and instead of, it's hard, because the battle of terrorism is actually a battle of hate.
Mm.
And people hate sometimes for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, they dislike something for no reason or something would frustrate them and they get their clouded judgment and they act unwisely. You know, everybody
right.
has done that
right.
at one level or another. The best thing is don't let those people make you afraid, make you look over your back or
right.
anything like that.
Which is what the president said yesterday. You know, he said, we will not be terrorized, which is such a different message from, Cheney and Rumsfeld and all these guys running around scurrying around, you know, oh my God, we got to do this, we got to do that, you know, throw this guy in jail, start, you know, black sites, we've got to have, you know, the CIA shoot him up.
Well,
you know.
Exactly. It's like somebody with, like a chicken with his head cut off.
Yeah, that was the Bush response to 9/11, and Obama here is now saying,
it's like those arrests,
out.
You know, somebody on a cell phone, so they pick him up, find out that he's not the one. It's almost like a frantic thing. We better get this person, or, you know, fast as we can. And by being panicky, then you're starting to be unwise, and more collateral damage is being.
Well, and the worst collateral damage that's done, Gary, is that stupid pieces of legislation get passed and civil rights get lost, and the snooping industrial complex gets bigger. Gary, thanks a lot for the call, and you add all those things together, and I just don't think it's a good thing for America. So I'm very, very pleased that this president is saying we will not be terrorized. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, CNN, it's TPM even has a montage of it up on their 2-minute and 40-second montage of John King going from, we got him to, we got two, we got none, we got, maybe not. And then, you know, maybe he knows now that we're looking for, how did he know that? Well, you just report it. Well, you know, it's hysterical. In any case, the latest, there was a bomb threat called into the federal courthouse. It's been evacuated. The president and one member of the Senate have apparently received letters that at least tested positive for ricin. In the initial tests, this is frequently false positives, but who knows? Eerie echoes of the anthrax after 9/11. We do not have anybody arrested. We do not have anybody formally identified. And the FBI has come out and formally, officially slapped the wrist of CNN for their early reporting. And that's why I've been so wary of. I've been, you know, telling you this is what so-and-so says, but I, you know, this is what, so, you know, here's what CNN says, here's what MSNBC says, here's what Fox says, here's what. Let's take it all with a grain of salt until the FBI comes out and says, okay, here's what's going on. In the meantime, a lot of other things going on in the world. Mike Papantonio is with us, the attorney and host of the Ring of Fire radio program, ringoffireradio.com. Pap, great to see you again.
Tom, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. One of the stories that really got lost in this whole Boston thing. And we will, if anything changes, we will break in and you know, let people know what's going on with that. But right now, it's just, you know, it's kind of static until 5 o'clock. One of the things that happened was that on the 11th, there was a law passed to let members of Congress trade on inside information, the stuff that Martha Stewart went to jail for lying about, not even doing.
Right.
And
yeah, you might remember that our president just a year ago signed a bill that said that about 28,000 government employees, very, very high management, very top of the food chain, that they had an obligation to disclose any potential conflicts by, first of all, disclosing who they're investing with, where is their money, what interest might they have. And so we're seeing a pattern here. On that day, the president said, you know, this is a great idea, and I'm going to sign it because it's going to stop the deficit of trust that takes place in Washington. The pattern we see with this president is day one, before the election, he's talking about what a great idea this is. Day two, in the silence, almost secret of the night, he signs off on this thing. Congress unanimously supports it. And it's the same thing we saw with Social Security, you understand, or any of the benefit kinds of stories, where day one, when he's running for president, there are going to be no cuts to Social Security, none to Medicare. Day two, when he becomes president, all that changes. So this is a very distinctive pattern about this president, Tom.
It seems so self-destructive.
Well, it is. Yeah. It is for Democrats.
Yeah. How is this going to help the Democratic Party in 2014? I mean, we have elections coming up, and when I hear, and you probably heard it too, Michelle Bachmann, you know, who has spent her whole entire life trying to privatize Social Security, come out and say, I am opposed to the president's cuts to Social Security.
Smart. Yeah, very smart.
Well, you know what? She's going to win re-election.
Yeah, the problem, Tom, is that what we're seeing is a reflection of a plutocracy. And we're so naive. You know, we want to hold on to this image of this well-oiled working democracy, but it's a plutocracy, and this president has been influenced by it. Don't forget, Tom, that this is a president that, if you recall, when progressives came out and they were critical of the way this president, this administration was handling Wall Street, Rahm Emanuel, his right hand, the guy who actually put this guy in office and built all of Obama's career, this guy, Rahm Emanuel, comes out and basically calls progressives who are critical effing retards. Mm. So nothing has changed here. The only thing that's changed is Obama now is more evident about it. You know, the fact
and,
is...
And yet, Pap, if it was Mitt Romney or John McCain...
There's no question, my friend, but listen, going
forward... And look at what Elena Kagan just said on the Supreme Court. She just came out and called her colleagues in this 5-4 decision that was reported today. There's a great piece in Daily Kos. You may have read it. I mean, she called them fools, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, look, here, the truth is, you're absolutely right. I mean, look at the money and the effort that I personally put into I did everything I could to have him elected both times.
Yeah.
But we're talking about what happens next, Tom. What happens in 2014? What happens in the next presidency?
So how do we push this guy in a way that we're not, you know, cutting his knees out from under him?
I don't think you can, because if you really to understand the foundations of plutocracy, and plutocracy is an easy thing. There's nothing tinfoil hat about it. It is that money rules, wealth rules in the United States. And we have him. We have him siding with all of that. He's siding with the idea that in everything, the decisions he's making. He's siding with the idea that since 1973, 80% of the wealth has gone to 2% of the population. 65%, Tom. 65% of the wealth has gone to the top 1%. You've had a GDP changing to where it's rising 110%, and the average worker is having their salary only rising at about 20%. So the reason I say these numbers are important is because this is what this president is adopting, you see. Hmm. He's so close to Wall Street. He surrounded himself with the Rubin crowd, Robert Rubin, the Paulson crowd, Summers, Geithner. He plays golf with Jamie Dimon, for God's sakes. That's not a good message, Tom. That, to me, the message is the plutocracy, the way they operate, is on day
and
one.
And yet that plutocracy has been hand-delivered to us by the Supreme Court. You and I both know that.
Well, to some degree.
I would argue, Pap, that we no longer have a democratic republic, a constitutionally limited democratic republic. We have a constitutional monarchy. There are 9 men and women two blocks from me who declared in 1803 that they had the right to strike down laws made by Congress and signed by the president. And ever since that decision, that Marbury versus Madison decision, and Jefferson went nuts. An attorney. You know about this.
Well put.
Jefferson went absolutely nuts. He said, if this decision stands, then the Constitution has become a thing of wax in the hands of an unelected judiciary. and he was right.
He was right, Tom.
And these guys, you know, for the last 100 years or so, they've been saying corporations are people and money is speech, and they're getting more and more blatant about it.
But it doesn't all fall on them. And here's what I mean by that. Listen, you had let's take a look at the Levin Committee. This is how plutocracy works. The Levin Committee that takes a look at the London Whale story, where crime at the worst element of crime, the Levin Committee looks at that and ignores what happens. This president has looked at what's happening on Wall Street and ignored it because that's where the money is. He's no different from Bill Clinton. We were hoping to see a little bit better from Bill Clinton, but he's no different. you know, just as the shift of power with Clinton moved from NAFTA and CAFTA and you name it, the power of plutocracy took over. We were hoping maybe this president would understand that democracy does not work within a plutocracy. But I'd love to put it in a different way. But if I were speaking face to face with him right now, you talk about the Supreme Court. Even look at this, Tom. The appointments that he's making to the courts, the federal courts, the Supreme Court, we'd want to think, oh, good, he's doing something for progressives. No. On social issues, we're hearing these courts come out, and, yeah, they're going to be good on social issues, these new court appointments. But look what they're doing for corporate America. That's where the stories aren't being told. That's where you see the plutocracy at work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we all have to stay as awake and aware and not let it wear us down, Pat, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
We've got to stay on this. Mike Papantonio, ringoffireradio.com. Thanks a lot for being with us, Pat.
Thank you, Tom.
I'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Be sure to check out Pat's program at ringoffireradio.com with Bobby Kennedy and Sam Cedar, Bobby Kennedy Jr. as well. So the latest report, yeah, the suspect has been identified. Maybe the FBI is saying, CNN, how dare you? We're going to slap your hand. You know, back off. Well, CNN is saying, no, maybe we actually have a story. You know, let's just chill out. A terrible thing happened in Boston. The Bostonians are showing the best of humanity. People ran toward the explosions to help people out. People saved lives. This is America. This is the best of America. This is the human nature. I mean, this is the best of humanity, too. And we're going to find out. We're going to find out, you know, who did this and why, and we can speculate on it all day long. I'm personally, whether this bomb or not was the consequence of all this, that big government's a terrible thing kind of talk where people are basically trashing America and trashing Lincoln and trashing Jefferson and trashing George Washington and trashing Franklin Roosevelt and Dwight Eisenhower and basically anybody who wanted to make American government work and who are trying to hold up as, you know, standard bearers, people who say, you know, like Ronald Reagan who said, you know, government's not the solution to the problem, it is the problem. Then why do you want to be the damn president? I think that kind of language, that kind of rhetoric, that kind of conversation, which has been going on in this country for 30, 40 years pretty aggressively, started with Daddy Koch and the John Birch Society that he was helping to fund, and Joe Coors and Richard Mellon Scaife and the younger Koch brothers and the whole libertarian thing, and Ayn Rand. What was her name? Alyssa Rosenberg, I think, was her real name, wasn't it? She came over from Russia. Her father's pharmacy got, you know, taken during the Bolshevik Revolution. And somehow she got it in her head that economics and government were the same thing and that capitalism was a form of governance. And so you got these people like Paul Ryan who read Atlas Shrugged, and they actually don't understand the difference between governance and economics. I mean, there is a relationship between the two, but there's also a very clear line of delineation between the two. And I think that kind of rhetoric that says that government is evil, government is the problem, there's no solution, it's only, you know, it's all, you know, the game is, well, the game is rigged, I was going to say, you know, I don't think that that's necessarily useful. And yet, at the same time, Elizabeth Warren won a Senate seat saying, literally, in fact, maybe you've got the clip there, Shane. I don't know if it's one of the ones you've got handy. No, it's buried down in the computer. That's all right. No problem. Elizabeth Warren became senator from Massachusetts, literally saying, yeah, the game is rigged, and I'm going to do something about it. Here she is.
People feel like the system is rigged against them. And here's the painful part. They're right. The system is rigged. Look around. Oil companies guzzle down billions in profits. Billionaires pay lower tax rates than their secretaries. And Wall Street CEOs the same ones who wrecked our economy and destroyed millions of jobs, still strut around Congress, no shame, demanding favors, and acting like we should thank them. Does anyone here have a problem with that?
Now, that was when she was campaigning. She has continued to talk like that ever since she was elected to the United States Senate. And she is not only taking on the banksters, she's taking on the Obama administration regulators. So, you know, Pap may be right that, of course he is, that, you know, our president is an imperfect man. He's not a progressive. He's a corporatist Democrat. That's okay. I mean, he's progressive on some issues. But if we don't participate, if you don't show up at Progressive Democrats of America, who, by the way, Tim Carpenter is going to be on the program, I think, tomorrow. I think he's going to be in the studio. He's going to be on the TV show. They got a gig going on here in Washington, D.C. And, you know, work in the room. Getting together with people like Keith Ellison and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Sherrod Brown, and there's a whole bunch of good people in Congress. And creating the space for a progressive conversation. Harry Reid today coming out. I want to honor Harry Reid for saying that he's going to support a ban on assault weapons. I don't think the vote has happened in Congress yet. I've had to check one of the websites here. They were going to have 9 different votes on amendments this afternoon, so I'm quite sure they haven't finished the whole process. It'll probably be around 6-7 o'clock tonight when they do. But Harry Reid, you know, has an A rating with the NRA because he represents Nevada, and Nevada's always been one of those states that's like, hey, guns, of course. And Harry Reid is saying enough is enough. And the assault weapon ban has, you know, virtually no chance of passing, of overcoming a Republican filibuster, because the Republicans are bought and paid for by the, you know, every industry in America, including the weapons industry. But he's standing up to them. And he's going to hold a vote on it. And he's going to vote in favor of it. So we'll see. Anyhow, we'll see how things shake out. Stephen in Roswell, Georgia. Hey, Stephen. Thanks.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm fine. I just got a 1-minute cue. I'm sorry. This has to be brief. My apologies. It's all yours.
I really appreciate your intellectual acumen. I actually am a conservative. I listen to your show. I think the point is we're all trying to drive towards freedom, maybe different pathways. But my question was, depending on, I just want to get your thought, what happens with this investigation in Boston if it's a, you know, Islamic terrorist versus a, you know, right-wing coup? How do you think the coverage could change, or should it change?
I think the coverage will be fairly predictable. If it's an Islamic terrorist, the anti-Islamic terrorist industry will jump into action, and you'll see Pam Geller everywhere, and you'll see the companies that are selling the products, etc. And if it's a right-wing kook, you'll see everybody on the left going, see, I told you so. It's a right-wing kook. It's fairly predictable. I'll tell you it was a right-wing kook if it's a right-wing kook. If it's a left-wing kook, I'll say it's a left-wing kook. I don't care whether it's right or left or however. I think the response is going to be predictable.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
The much more important question is not how does the media respond. It's how do we, the people, how does our government respond? Do we do a terrified, frightened routine like Bush and Cheney did and take away our civil liberties? Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you. Louis Gohmert. This is, by the way, bottom of the hour here, just a quick update. We still don't know what's going on. The federal courthouse has been evacuated with a bomb threat. The hospital, what was the story at the hospital? We had the fellow called in from the hospital. Oh, that's right. There was a car with a gasoline can out in front. And I think it's probably a stretch to think maybe there was somebody in the hospital that they wanted to get over to the courthouse, and so they evacuated both of them. But that's on the edge of tinfoil hat, so we'll just leave that there. I definitely don't want to do a John King. We are waiting to hear. By the way, the 5 o'clock briefing that was supposed to happen 25 minutes from now has been canceled. A magistrate is on standby, so there may be some truth to the fact that somebody's about to be arraigned or charged or something, but nobody knows for sure. So we still don't know. We don't know who. We don't know why. We're increasingly learning how. So that's that. Meanwhile, Louis Gohmert is convinced that Mexico is training Islamic terrorists or something like that. See if you can make any sense of this.
We know Al-Qaeda has camps over with the drug cartels on the other side of the Mexican border. We know that people are now being trained to come in and act like Hispanic when they're radical Islamists. We know these things are happening, and we need, it's just insane not to protect ourselves.
Well, Louis Gohmert using the word insane, so there's something, you know, incredibly ironic about that. So we know, or at least Louis knows, I don't think the rest of us know. I, you know, to the best of my knowledge, nobody in the federal government has said, yeah, Louis's right. you know, the next time you, you know, walk down the street and somebody Hispanic walks by that, you know, particularly if they're dressed in a way that would, you know, make you think that they were a recent immigrant to the United States or very proud of their Hispanic heritage, that's definitely a Muslim terrorist in disguise, right? But that's Louis Gohmert would have you believe that. Laura Ingraham, right-wing talk show host, had some interesting thoughts on Boston and immigration. I don't get how you conflate these, but maybe you can make some sense out of this one.
At this moment, we are considering legalizing or giving regularized status to millions of people. Pretty much none of them have gone through any rigorous background checks, to, you know, have a, you know, a temporary status in the United States. And we don't, I just think there are all sorts of security implications aside from the other arguments on immigration, national security implications. We can't stop every attack, but my goodness, if we had borders that were shut down and we actually had a proper screening process, maybe we could stop some of them.
I wish I had a time machine, you know? I really do. 1986-87 was a long time ago. And those 2 years, it was actually 13 months from June of 86 to July of 87. Louise and I and our three kids lived in Germany. And in West Germany, right by the Czech border and right by the East German border. And there was... There was a fence there, a wall, that actually worked. It actually worked. It was amazing. We had one of the two, well, there's three of these Salem programs in Germany, and we lived in the one in Steinach, which was about 50, 60 miles from the wall. The one in Herkheim, literally the back of the farm ended at the road, at the dirt road, that was the border. And here's how it was laid out. There was this dirt road that ran for miles, and then there was maybe 10 or 15 feet of grass, of just like unmowed, you know, pasture, with big blue signs in it that said Grenze, you know, border, frontier, and had all these warnings about landmines, because that was actually East Germany. So if your car accidentally went off the road, the landmine would take you out. And my friend Gerhardt used to love to drive down that road at 60, 70 miles an hour on this dirt road and just scare the bejesus out of Louise and me. It reached the point where Louise wouldn't get in the car with him. In any case, so you got 10, 15 feet of dirt, of grass, and then there's like this 25-foot-tall chain link fence with razor wire across the top. And then there's about a 15 or 20 foot stretch of sand that's been smoothed perfectly, so a single footprint will show up in it. And then there's another 25, 30 foot tall fence with razor wire at the top. And they're both electrified, and they got all these signs all over them that they're electrified. Every now and then you see a bird hit one of them and just go poof. And about every 100 or so yards, there's either a tower or a pillbox, and they alternate. Tower, pillbox, tower, pillbox, tower, pillbox, and they're all within sight of each other. And in the towers, they look like the towers in a airline, you know, in an airport. They're maybe 12, 14 stories high, and it's just a tower with windows all around the top, and there's a bunch of guys up there with machine guns. And then the pillboxes, which are between the towers and about, you know, 100 yards apart, look like the old-fashioned World War II pillboxes. They're these little brown and black painted things that stick up about 3-4 feet from the ground, and you see the slots where the machine guns come out. And as you're driving along, or if you get out of the car, God forbid, and I did it a bunch of times. I got all kinds of pictures of me standing on the border of East Germany. They point their guns at you, right? Here you are. I'm standing here on the border. If I step back a foot and a half, I'm on a landmine. If I want to try and cross this border, I got to go across 15 feet of landmine-seeded soil. Then I got to climb an electrified, and not just electrified. I mean, in Germany, they really know how to electrify things. They run their train system on this stuff, right? This is probably 22,000 volts. They got this electrified fence, and then if you get across the electrified fence, you got to make it across the sand. You get across the sand, you got to cross another electrified fence, and then on the other electrified fence, they've got the guys with the dogs walking continuously up and down, checking out the sand. And then if you get over to that side, then they got the guys with the pillboxes and the towers, and they just shoot you dead. And a lot of people got shot dead. This is not funny. I mean, there are pictures. You can probably find them on the internet. But you know, when the wall came down, a lot of these really came out in West Germany. Pictures of people who had tried to cross these walls, or the early walls in East and West Berlin, who literally got, you know, hung right across the middle and got disemboweled by the razor wire, and their guts are falling all over the ground, or they got shot as they were, or they got blown up. I remember sleeping in Herheim. In the Solemn Children's Village there in the farm, sleeping in the spring. Must have been March, April. The sun comes up. Now, I am literally 50 feet from the east-west German border. The sun comes up, and as the sun comes up, it warms the soil. The soil is seeded with landmines. Guess what wakes me up at 6 o'clock in the morning? Boom! The landmine's going off because the soil, you know, because the winter freeze is unfreezing and the soil is moving around and it's setting off the landmines. And then the guys in the towers get all hysterical, and every now and then you hear them shooting that, you know, just in case it was somebody, you know. And every now and then a rabbit will get in there and set off one of the landmines. So that's how you do it. And can you play the last 15, 20 seconds of that Laura Ingraham clip, Shane? Just the last 10, 15 seconds of it. It's going to take you that long to pull it up. Because I just want to tell you, this is the only way you can have a fence that works. I have been there. And then you have people say things like this.
We can't stop every attack, but my goodness, if we had borders that were shut down and we actually had a proper screening process, maybe we could stop some of them.
Yeah, we have borders that shut down. I mean, really? I just missed that. If there was a note to me there on the... Oh, the AP is reporting... Oh, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that, Danielle. The Associated Press is reporting that the Senate vote on the background check was 54-46. In other words, it passed, according to the Constitution, the background check passed, but the Republicans say, no, you can't do it without 60 votes, so it did not pass, so there will not be background checks. People, crazy people will still be allowed to buy guns in the United States. Tell me this is not absolutely bizarre. And tell me, I mean, this, we had Rusty on the show yesterday, and I was trying to demonstrate, I suppose, as much as anything else. I mean, Rusty had actually proposed it, but that, you know, remember a week or so ago I said, I am not my politics. I am me, and I have my politics, and I'm quite passionate about them. And I'm not going to, you know, give them up to anybody. I mean, I don't compromise. And yet, I can see the humanity in other people. So we were trying to do that. But Rusty's in town for this hold their feet to the fire thing on immigration. And they're all yelling about how we need to have this border.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'll tell you how, after the break, how that East Berlin border is going to be what is going to prevent immigration from happening here in the United States. And we'll give you an update on what's going on in Boston. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, I told you I was going to tell you how the immigration bill is going to get blown up, how it's not going to work. And it's the same. It's with a poison pill. It's absolutely going to be with a poison pill. And this is how, you know, the Republicans poison pilled the post office, you know, with the pre-funding $75 years worth of benefits. They poison pilled Medicare with the you can't negotiate with drug companies. They're going to poison pill immigration by saying unless we have a wall between the United States and Mexico that's just like the one between East and West Berlin with 20, 30 foot razor wire and pill towers every 100 feet and guard towers and dogs and 30,000 volts and all that kind of stuff, then the law doesn't go into effect. And that's how they're going to do it. And so my prediction. Anyway, end of rant. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Services with us, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old. Goat.com, where you can help a rescued slave by giving them a goat and get a photo of yourself and that goat. And Ellen may well have taken that picture because she gets over there several times a year. This is her charity. Ellen Ratner, welcome.
Okay, well, the bad news is that even a compromise, which isn't a very good one, on gun control, the Manchin Toomey, it failed.
But it got 54 votes. It got more than half of the votes.
46.
Yeah, it got more than half of the votes that it needed, but the Republicans said, no, we're going to filibuster this.
Right. And the vice president was on hand. He was doing his job as president of the Senate today.
Wow.
The president will be making a statement at the Rose Garden about this very shortly, about a half hour from now.
I hope he uses the word filibuster. I hope he points out that this piece of legislation actually passed the Senate, or should have passed the Senate if it had more than 50 votes, according to the Constitution. But the Republicans were using the Senate rules.
Crazy rules of 60.
Yeah. This was a filibuster. This was not a failed vote. This was a successful filibuster. And I sure hope that he makes that frame clear to the American people.
For sure. Now there are several other amendments that are happening as we speak. There's a Grassley amendment on mentally ill and enforcement for individuals who broke the law. Patrick Leahy of Vermont is doing one that increases time in prison for straw purchases. John Cornyn of Texas, this is the one that fortunately will not pass, allows concealed carry permits to be valid in other states.
Mm-hmm.
Feinstein will do her assault. Barrasso of Wyoming wants 5% of any money for states taken away from community policing if they give out the home addresses of people who own guns. Harkin and Alexander, this one will probably pass, want prevention money and mental health awareness. Jay Carney said today that everyone at the White House is working on this issue from the president on down.
Yeah. The tragedy about the mental health thing is that it's, I mean, yes, we all agree we should have, in fact, there should be absolute parity between mental and physical health in all of our healthcare, everything. But this is basically the NRA's talking point, is it's not the guns, it's the crazy people.
Right.
And they're just walking right into that trap.
Right. And it's unbelievable, but they are. You're right. On the situation in Boston, as you know, the news media reported that they had a suspect they arrested, then they said they didn't arrest them, then they said they can't figure out who it is to face.
Right, and now John King has gone into hiding, right?
Right.
I'm speaking facetiously.
Right. And now the Joe Moakley, member of Congress, they had a federal courthouse named after him. It has been evacuated as somebody called in a bomb threat. As you know, there were also evacuations up on the Hill today. There's a lot of this kind of copycat craziness.
Yeah, yeah.
The president had a briefing from the attorney general, the FBI director, the national security advisor, White House counsel, vice president security advisor on all of this today. Mrs. Obama is going to Boston. His speech tomorrow is going to focus on resolved and how, as Americans, we are all feeling what happened. Now, on the Ricin letter, the president also got a Ricin letter, and it looks like it did test for Ricin. It also looks like other senators may have gotten that as well. So, I mean, this is clearly, you know, this stuff just tends to happen in groupings for some reason.
Well, you know, after 9/11, they whipped out the Patriot Act and said, pass this thing. And the two guys who could have stopped it were Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle. It had to get out of Pat Leahy's Judiciary Committee, and then Tom Daschle had to bring it to the floor of the Senate. And they were both very skeptical about the Patriot Act. And by some magical coincidence, those are the only two elected officials in the United States who got anthrax in the mail. And in my opinion, we still don't know who sent it to them. I'm just waiting for a piece of legislation to drop. Do you think I'm crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy. By the way, I do want to point out that our very own Bob Ney voted against the Patriot Act.
Good on him.
He's gotten a lot of trouble for that. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Supreme Court did have some decisions. One, Truth and Honesty, my brother has been very active in this, the alien torts claim, 9-0. This was a claim by Nigerians against Royal Dutch Petroleum for what Royal Dutch Petroleum did. And they now say, the Supreme Court, that you cannot bring foreign cases. In other words, the Nigerians can't use the U.S. courts to go after Royal Dutch Petroleum. However, they can bring cases that may include, this was again, not everybody said this, but that might include United States officials who commit violations outside of the United States.
So the scope of the Alien Torts Act has been somewhat limited or radically
totally
limited?
Limited, basically, to the tiniest sliver.
I see.
So in other words, it doesn't include American corporations, but if you're an official, so...
Right.
So
Royal Dutch Shell does business in the United States, has offices in the United States, has subsidiaries in the United States, but they're still beyond the reach of the law.
That's exactly as I understand it correct. Now that's a Brother Michael issue.
But if they had been, and we'll have to get him on and talk with him about it. But had it been a government official, we can go after them because government's always the problem, right? It's not the,
right.
Yeah, okay. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
We will be back 10 minutes before, or 1 minute before you. By the way, check out free-don.org for this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's 6 minutes past 5 o'clock Eastern Time right now, and the promised news conference that the Boston Police Department and FBI or whoever it was, you know, the whole bunch of them, were going to hold has been is not happening. The important point is that it was not canceled; it has been postponed, which would suggest that there's something going on. A couple of things. There's a Richard Jewell cannot accept our apology. A couple threads over at DU that I thought were just extraordinary. Richard Jewell cannot accept our apology. I lived in Atlanta at the time of the Olympics bombing, and he died 11 years after the bombing. Exonerated, but a broken man. I mean, he was a pariah. And he was actually a good guy. I mean, he was trying to help. We've got to be sure that we get it right this time. Let's not do this,
it looks like there was a dark-skinned man who was, this was John King apparently saying this.
And then William Rivers Pitt, I'm not sure that this is William Rivers Pitt. It might just be somebody who goes by the screen name of William Pitt over at DU, but has made a lot of posts there. I'm not reporting this. I want to make this clear. I don't know this firsthand. But it's one of those things that seems pretty credible. One of the talking heads over at CNN is the former Homeland Security Advisor to George W. Bush, Fran Townsend. And so the question is, guess who's responsible for CNN's blown arrest report? Bush's former Homeland Security advisor? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I think the larger issue here, aside from, you know, let's get this right and let's be rational about it, is to keep an eye on what's going on with our democracy. The NRA just had this incredible victory in the Senate. 95% of Americans want there to be a background check before you buy a weapon, an instrument of death. We're not talking about buying a car here. We're not talking about buying a cocktail dress or a tuxedo. We're not talking about buying a pair of shoes. We're not talking about buying a house. We're not talking about getting a credit card. We're talking about buying something that has one purpose. That's killing people or killing other things. Or one primary purpose. And the vast majority, well over 90% of Americans, want there to be at least, you know, before you buy it, we got to check and make sure that you don't have a history of trying to kill people or beating people up or domestic violence or mental illness. And the Republicans just filibustered this thing. The Republicans just successfully filibustered this in the United States Senate. It got 54 votes. It got the Democrats. But 46 Republicans, nah, ain't going to do it. And then you hear this talk about, oh well, you know, we're gonna do amnesty, right? Yeah, right. And the amnesty only kicks in if there is actually a certification that our border fence is protected, or that our border is protected. And I'm telling you, that's a joke. This is another scam. It's just a scam. The Democrats are doing it because they actually want to have some sort of amnesty. Amnesty is the wrong word. They want to have a path to immigration, legal immigration, and they want to have a program for, in particular, the DREAM program for young people who came over here, not with any illegal intent. And that's, in my mind, an entirely reasonable thing. I've been saying on this program for years, we do not have an illegal immigration problem in this country. We have an illegal employer problem. When you start having rich white guys doing perp walks because they're hiring people who are not citizens, all of a sudden, you're not going to have an immigration problem. Well, frankly, we haven't had an illegal immigration problem for 2 years. We are, you know, we have a net negative flow of people. People are leaving the country, not coming into the country. Because the economy sucks. Because the Republicans will not, you know, they've frustrated every effort that the Obama administration has made to try to improve the economy. And state after state, now Michigan just went right to work for less. But in any case, in an attempt to get the Republicans on board, we'll go along with this fence thing. And the Republicans, no, the fence is just going to, you know, it's a boondoggle. It's a poison pill. It's like the Republicans said to the Democrats, hey, wouldn't you like to give everybody on Medicare free drugs? Let's do that. And make sure that the drug companies can charge whatever they damn well please and the government can't negotiate it. Because the drug companies give a lot of money to Republicans. Democrats said, well, okay, if that's the only way to do it. There is a book which is out of print right now by Dan Sisson. It's called The Revolution of 1800. And in that book, Dan is just a brilliant historian. And in that book, he lays out how when the election of 1800 happened, when Thomas Jefferson kicked John Adams out of the White House, it literally was a revolution. And the people of the United States did not want split government. Split government is not a desirable thing. The founders and framers of the Constitution wanted unified government. Now, it might be unified in the Federalist direction, the Republican direction, or it might be unified in the Democratic-Republican direction, the modern-day Democrats, the Anti-Federalists. But they wanted it to be working. It isn't anymore. And it isn't, because we have had 5 years now of consistent, absolutely consistent obstruction by the Republicans in the House of Representatives, in the United States Senate in particular, of anything that the Democrats are trying to do to make this country work. And the two hopes that I have, the two after this conversation we had with Pat a little earlier, it's kind of depressing, but the two hopes that I have, three hopes really. One, there are a lot of activists out there who are active, from the Occupy movement to Progressive Democrats for America, pdamerica.org, the Jim Dean's organization, democracyforamerica.com. There's a bunch of good people doing good work, number one. Number two, some of that good work is to actually amend the Constitution and say, we are going to defy the monarchs in our constitutional monarchy, the nine people on the Supreme Court, or at least the five out of the nine, who said that corporations are people and money is speech. We are going to defy them and pass an amendment to the United States Constitution that says that corporations are not entitled to the rights of human persons enumerated in the Constitution and protected by the Constitution, and that money is property, it is not speech. Those things give me hope. The work that Tom Lindsay with CELDEF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDF.org, the work that Tom is doing, there's going to be a movie coming out about this, a little documentary. It's going to be great. The work that Tom is doing, where they're actually getting communities to pass laws saying corporations are not people in our town. And they just got a judge a couple of weeks ago saying, yeah, okay, cool, I'm with you. I mean, get over to CELDEF.org. There's some really good stuff being done in the United States. And there's some really good people. Curtis Morrison, the Curtis Morrison Legal Defense Fund. Go to GoFundMe.com and search for Curtis Morrison. Check that out. Help this guy out. There's some good people out there doing some good work. And it's a good thing. There is hope for this country. There really is.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And that hope comes from people like you and me and anybody else listening who actually says, okay, I will do something. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Brian, in Kearneysville, West Virginia, you want to know why I support the H-1B visa program to throw IT workers under the bus? I don't.
No. Sorry, Tom. It's part of the comprehensive immigration bill that tripling and doubling the amount of H-1B visas.
Oh, yeah, I know. You're right.
Why should us IT people be part of sacrificial lambs to give
I totally agree with you.
To another group of people?
The bill sucks. I mean, the bill, as I said, it's got this poison pill in it. It's never going to, you know, the supposed amnesty, the path to immigration, that's never really going to happen. Or not in any meaningful way. The fence industry is going to get larger and larger, you know, because building fences is apparently very, very profitable. The private prison industry is going to have their hand in this, I guarantee you. And you're right, the H-1B visa program is expanded in the bill, and not just that, by the way. There's going to be more and more of this coming along with things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership and others. We are losing our national sovereignty. We are sacrificing the middle class on the altar of transnational corporate greed, and it ain't a good thing. It's just period, not a good thing. Brian, yes, sir.
God bless you.
Okay.
That's all I wanted to say. I didn't listen to the whole segment, and I stand corrected, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate your comment. A very, very cogent comment. Sam in Greenville, Kentucky. Hey, Sam, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Listen, I wanted to say, first of all, I agree with you that there are a lot of good people out there doing some good work, and there is hope for the country. But the thing I called you about, now, if I know that you're telling your listeners and stuff like that it was a Republican filibuster. The Republicans requested the 60-vote threshold for the background checks on the gun.
They did.
But yes, they did. But
Mitch McConnell required that.
They also asked Harry Reid, the Democrats did, for the same thing. And this is according to Chuck Todd, who is, you know, if he knows Democrat politics, it's him.
Yeah.
But they wanted some political cover in this as well, because a lot of those Democrats are in rural red states.
Right.
And they needed that cover.
Yeah, the Claire McCaskills and the Joe Manchins of the world. I understand the politics of it, Sam, and that's probably absolutely true.
That's all I wanted to mention about it.
Okay. Well, thank you for it. And again, what it does is it demonstrates how dysfunctional our system is. And our, you know, the gun manufacturers, the weapons manufacturers, the manufacturers of instruments of mass death should not have this kind of power in a democratic republic. And they don't in any other democratic republic in the world. Or at least any other advanced, I mean, they might in some little banana republic someplace, but no other advanced democracy. It's just wrong. Carrie in Santa Monica, California. Hey, Carrie, what's up?
Hi. Hi. You have a great program, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I was just thinking that, listening to gun control, that maybe if you look at the 46 senators who voted no, if you look at their population and their constituents to see, did they vote against them? Because I don't think it's 95%.
Well, this wasn't even gun control. Hey, this was just background checks.
I know. The background control, so the littlest thing, okay?
Yeah.
Background checks.
Yeah.
So if you look at each of these guys, like McConnell, is in Kentucky, do they indeed support the background check?
Yeah, by and large, they do, actually.
Yeah, so, I mean, you put that up.
NRA members support background checks.
But you know, you have that, and then you have this, you know, 50-51 vote, you know, is not a majority. That, you know, my husband's an attorney. He's a litigator. And, you know, I just got off the phone with him a little bit ago. And he's like, just throw that out. It's unconstitutional. Throw it out.
Yeah.
You would have won.
Yeah, the Constitution says, the Constitution is quite clear. You know, a majority... With a few exceptions, things like treaties and, you know, acts of war, I think is something. There's a few things that you have to have a supermajority for. But to pass ordinary legislation, you have to have a majority. And there's 100 senators, so a majority is 50 plus one. And that plus one can be the Vice President of the United States, or it could simply be 51 senators. And we have 54 senators for this.
And the playoffs, you know, it's like 3 out of 4. You know, if you win 4 games, you win. You know, come on.
Yeah.
Well,
this is how politics used to function in the United States. You know, during the Eisenhower administration, during the Kennedy administration, during the Johnson administration, during the Nixon administration. You know, Nixon didn't like the EPA. He tried to veto the EPA. Everybody wants to give credit to Nixon for the EPA, right? He was a liberal. He loved the EPA. No, he hated the EPA. But he went along with it because he got it, that the American people wanted it. For years and years and years and years and years in the United States, whatever party was in the majority, the minority party would yell and scream and kick their feet, but they allowed business to be done. And now you've got a party, the Republican Party, that has, ever since Barack Obama was elected, and I will tell you, I agree with my friend Joe Madison that there is a racial element to this, although I don't think it's the entire thing. I don't even think it's the majority thing. But ever since Barack Obama was elected, there has been a united stand against the Democratic Party and against this president that is unlike anything I have ever seen in the six plus decades that I have been, conscious, 5+ decades on this planet. And it's maybe the Congress of 47-48, which was long before I was born, that Harry Truman ran against that pushed through Taft-Hartley over his veto, and 3 times, in fact. Maybe that Congress was that bad, but there has been nothing like this, Carrie.
I have one more thing to say. You know, I mean,
quickly,
these 3.5 more years to go. So what about some executive, you know, orders? You know, they'll come out against that, but you can't do anything about it. Now it's time.
The problem is an executive order without funding is impotent. It can do nothing. The Constitution very specifically gives the power of the purse to the House of Representatives, period. So Obama can create agencies all day long, you know, within the framework of existing laws, and he can try and do things. But if he doesn't have the funding from Congress to do it, and this is how, or the heads of agencies. I mean, right now, here we have this explosion in Boston. We got this agency called the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. It has not had a director. It has not had a director since the beginning of the Obama administration because the NRA doesn't want it to.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Actually, it has not had a director since it was reformulated in 2001 because the NRA did not want it to. May be speaking shortly. If he does, we'll go right to it. Meanwhile, the good, the bad, and the very, very eleemosynarily ugly, the good. Liz Kosieris, Monday's Boston Marathon bombings left thousands of runners stuck in the Massachusetts Capitol. People from all over the city rushed to provide support and housing for stranded athletes. Although Liz Kosieris, a California native, was nowhere near Boston at the time, she still felt the need to join in with the volunteer efforts. Working with fellow users of the online aggregating site Reddit, Kosieris contacted Anytime Pizza in Cambridge, Mass. And helped them coordinate the delivery of hundreds of pizzas to shelters, apartments, and houses hosting marathon runners. On days like Monday, it's easy to get pessimistic about human nature, but people like Liz Kosieris are just a reminder that, more than not, disaster brings out the best in us. The bad. Greg Abbott. Abbott, the Attorney General of Texas, has some very interesting views regarding his state's geopolitical security. He told this to a recent meeting of the McLennan County chapter of the Republican Party.
One thing that requires ongoing vigilance is the reality that the state of Texas is coming under a new assault, an assault far more dangerous than what the leader of North Korea threatened when he said he was going to add Austin, Texas, as one of the recipients of his nuclear weapons. The threat that we're getting is the threat from the Obama administration and his political machine.
End quote. Yep, you heard him right. The Democratic Party, not the authoritarian state threatening to rain nuclear warheads down on major Texas cities. The Democratic Party is the biggest threat facing the Lone Star State these days. Compelling stuff. And the very, very ugly, Bob Davis. During a recent broadcast of his show, The Davis and Emmer Show, the Minnesota talk show host let loose on the issue of gun control. As expected, Davis strongly criticized President Obama and Senate Democrats and their support for new firearm regulations, but he saved his most passionate attacks for the parents of Newtown victims telling them to go to hell. Seriously. Take a listen.
And I have something I want to say to the victims of Newtown or any other shooting. I don't care if it's here in Minneapolis or anyplace else. Just because a bad thing happened to you doesn't mean that you get to put a king in charge of my life. I'm sorry that you suffered a tragedy, but you know what? Deal with it and don't force me to lose my liberty, which is a greater tragedy than your loss. I'm sick and tired of seeing these victims trotted out, given rides on Air Force One, hauled into the Senate well, and everyone is just afraid. They're terrified of these victims.
Used.
I would stand in front of them and tell them
they're being used.
Go to hell.
Inexcusable and very, very ugly. Well, Andy Borowitz is reporting, you know, the very authoritative news source here. The BorowitzReport.com, of course, the website. Authorities who have spent the past 40, and I, with permission of Andy, authorities who have spent the past 48 hours combing CNN in the hopes of finding any information whatsoever have called off their search, they confirmed today. The quote he has here is from one authority who said, after monitoring every minute of CNN's broadcast since Monday, we have found hearsay, rumors, falsehoods, and a steady stream of inane commentary. Everything but information. The announcement was a second black eye for CNN, which earlier in the afternoon recanted all of its reporting dating back to mid-2009. Newly installed CNN chief Jeff Zucker acknowledged that the network had experienced a rough patch since he took over earlier this year, but added, well, at least no one was watching. So, anyway, if the president is supposed to be giving a speech, okay, there's a Sandy Hook victim speaking right now. The president is behind him. He will be speaking next. Presumably this has to do with the successful Republican filibuster of the, I can't even call this gun control because it's not gun control. It's got nothing to do with gun control. This has to do with background checks in the United States Senate. It's just quite mind-boggling. So, anyhow, let me get a quick call in here. We'll see, because it looks like it's Got to be a few minutes. Sam in Coos Bay, Oregon. Hey, Sam. Thanks for listening to KBBR. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to say, you know, you were talking earlier about Elizabeth Warren, and she's such a champion for the working class.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think about her as a VP with Hillary Clinton?
I'd vote for it.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
I think, I mean, you would have, you know, Hillary with her vast experience. You got the first husband as explainer-in-chief going around the country. And then you could have the Obama fundraising machine out there contributing to all the Democratic candidates for the House and Senate. You could maybe possibly take it over again.
Yeah, maybe. A lot's going to depend on what happens in this country, particularly economically, over the next 3.5 years. But anything Elizabeth Warren is associated with, sign me up for. And I think Hillary Clinton's pretty good, too. But Elizabeth Warren in particular. Sam, thanks for the call. Bob in Hermit, California. Hey, Bob, what's up? Bob? Okay. Nancy in Oaklawn, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Nancy.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Fine.
I agree with you, except I think I'd switch it around. Hillary would be vice president, but that's another story.
Okay.
I'd
go with that, too.
I know. I just wanted to call and tell you that I called Reed's office after I heard that, the bill didn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
And his shill was actually screaming at me, yelling at me, I guess I should say. I don't want to exaggerate. But because I asked him one question, I said, could you just ask Mr. Reed, how's that filibuster deal going for him? Oh, what do you mean? You know, and I said to him, well, the bill didn't pass today. He said, oh, that's not because of that. I said, what's it because of? And I wish I would have written it down. I'm going to maybe call him back and ask him, because he just threw me so much when he started yelling that bill wouldn't have passed anyway, because certain bills need 60 votes. I said, yeah, they need 60 votes because you guys won't, change the filibuster. No, that isn't it. Certain bills have to have 60 votes. Yeah. They can't just go by the majority, by 51.
That's amazing. Nancy, thank you for sharing that story with us, and thanks for calling. The president is speaking.
Including the shootings of a United States Congresswoman, Gabby Gifford, who's here today, and the murder of 20 innocent school children and their teachers. This country took up the cause of protecting more of our people from gun violence. Families that know unspeakable grief summon the courage to petition their elected leaders. Not just to honor the memory of their children, but to protect the lives of all of our children. A few minutes ago, a minority in the United States Senate decided it wasn't worth it. They blocked common sense gun reforms, even while these families looked on from the Senate gallery. By now, it's well known that 90% of the American people support universal background checks that make it harder for a dangerous person to buy a gun. We're talking about convicted felons, people convicted of domestic violence, people with a severe mental illness. 90% of Americans support that idea. Most Americans think that's already the law. And a few minutes ago, 90% of Democrats in the Senate voted for that idea. But it's not going to happen, because 90% of Republicans in the Senate just voted against that idea. A majority of senators voted yes to protecting more of our citizens with smarter background checks. But by this continuing distortion of Senate rules, a minority was able to block it from moving forward. Now, I'm going to speak plainly and honestly about what's happened here, because the American people are trying to figure out, how can something have 90% support and yet not happen? We had a Democrat and a Republican, both gun owners, both fierce defenders of our Second Amendment, with A grades from the NRA, come together and work together to write a common sense compromise on background checks. And I want to thank Joe Manchin and Pat Toomey for their courage in doing that. That was not easy, given their traditional strong support for Second Amendment rights. As they said, nobody could honestly claim that the package they put together infringed on our Second Amendment rights. All it did was extend the same background check rules that already apply to guns purchased from a dealer to guns purchased at gun shows or over the internet. So 60% of guns are already purchased through a background check system. This would have covered a lot of the guns that are currently outside that system. Their legislation showed respect for gun owners, and it showed respect for the victims of gun violence. And Gabby Giffords, by the way, is both. She's a gun owner and a victim of gun violence. She is a Westerner and a moderate, and she supports these background checks. In fact, even the NRA used to support expanded background checks. The current leader of the NRA used to support these background checks. So while this compromise didn't contain everything I wanted or everything that these families wanted, it did represent progress.
And it just got shot down by a Republican filibuster in the United States Senate. And the President of the United States just called them out. Good on him. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Wayne LaPeter wins, America loses. Go for it. So he said, all in all, this was a pretty shameful day for Washington. Is he still speaking? Okay, let's go back to the President of the United States.
In the existing background check system, we're going to give law enforcement more information about lost and stolen guns so it can do its job. We're going to help to put in place emergency plans to protect our children in their schools. But we can do more if Congress gets its act together. And if this Congress refuses to listen to the American people and pass common sense gun legislation, then the real impact is going to have to come from the voters. To all the people who supported this legislation, law enforcement and responsible gun owners, Democrats and Republicans, urban moms, rural hunters, whoever you are, you need to let your representatives in Congress know that you are disappointed and that if they don't act this time, you will remember come election time. To the wide majority of NRA households who supported this legislation, you need to let your leadership and lobbyists in Washington know they didn't represent your views on this one. The point is, those who care deeply about preventing more and more gun violence will have to be as passionate and as organized and as vocal as those who blocked these common sense steps to help keep our kids safe. Ultimately, you outnumber those who argue the other way. But they're better organized, they're better financed, they've been at it longer, and they make sure to stay focused on this one issue during election time. And that's the reason why you can have something that 90% of Americans support, and you can't get it through the Senate or the House of Representatives. So to change Washington, you, the American people, are going to have to sustain some passion about this. And when necessary, you've got to send the right people to Washington. And that requires strength. And it requires persistence. And that's the one thing that these families should have inspired in all of us. I still don't know how they have been able to muster up the strength to do what they've been doing over the last several weeks, last several months. And I see this as just round one. You know, when Newtown happened, I met with these families and I spoke to the community and I said, something must be different right now. we're going to have to change. That's what the whole country said. Everybody talked about how we were going to change something to make sure this didn't happen again. Just like everybody talked about how we needed to do something after Aurora. Everybody talked about we need to change something after Tucson. Now, I'm assuming that the emotions that we've all felt since Newtown, the emotions that we've all felt since Tucson and Aurora and Chicago, the pain we share with these families and families all across the country who've lost a loved one to gun violence, I'm assuming that's not a temporary thing. I'm assuming our expressions of grief and our commitment to do something different to prevent these things from happening are not empty words. I believe we're going to be able to get this done. Sooner or later, we are going to get this right. The memories of these children demand it, and so do the American people. Thank you very much, everybody.
President of the United States. During the break, he made reference to actual lies that were in viral emails that were going around about what this legislation was about. He pointed out that Joe Manchin and Pat Toomey, I believe, are the two people who put this thing together. Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, Pat Toomey, Republican from Pennsylvania, that they put together this bill, that this bill does nothing more than background checks. Are you mentally stable? Do you have a history of domestic violence? Do you have a criminal background? Period. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff in this legislation that the president actually wanted. You know, not just the president. I mean, we're not talking about an assault weapon bans here. We're not talking about a national gun registry here. We're not talking about any of them. We're just talking about background checks. You know what I found most interesting about that speech that we just heard? Is for the first 4 years of the Obama presidency, he would have said it like this. Well, today was a difficult day. Both sides of the aisle got together, and one side of the aisle decided to not go along with the other side. And, you know, hopefully we can bring all this together and work things out in the future. But where's that effect? In other words, he never used the R word, Republican. Never said it. First 4 years of his presidency. I mean, you know, he probably did a few times, but I have no recollection of it. I remember over and over and over again watching speeches where I'm yelling at the TV saying, you know, call out the Republicans, please. And he's trying to be nice. You know, the other side. It's like Bernie, you know, he says our friends, the Republicans, at least he, you know, we get the sarcasm. Yeah. Not quite sarcasm. It's just, you know, it's the formality, but you get it. But, you know, but I was very, very pleased to hear the Republican, to hear the president use the word Republican and actually call these guys out. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news and information on the Boston bombing investigation. No breaks in that as of this moment, by the way. And we'll bring you up to speed on what's happening in Congress and the Supreme Court. Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science, and the best of the rest of the news, along with your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Get out there, get active. Go to free-don.org. Go to pdamerica.org. Go to movetoamend.org. Get active. Do something. Occupy something. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.